Okay, so, you know, I'm sure, I didn't check exactly what we talked about last year in terms of Shemitah, but we definitely talked about some of the mitzvot, the Tameh HaMitzvot of Shemitah. But I thought, obviously, because that's the beginning of Bahar, if you forgot why we were doing this, I know it's very hard to keep track of what parsha we're on. Like, it's,
I don't know what day it is, really.
I know, it's crazy. It's like every day, it's like, is it Sunday, is it Thursday? I don't even know.
I think it's
like, at this point, honestly, the way that I know that it's not Monday or Thursday is that I don't go to shul.
I think
because now that they've moved, now that they've allowed Kriyas HaTorah,
yeah.
So like they've moved it back to the rechava in front of the shul, but like I find it much harder to keep social distance there. So for the moment, for Shabbos, I go at 6:30 when there isn't so many people, right? But like Monday, Thursday, I'm not like segur on that. Yep. Okay. But I as I was looking back through some of the Tameh HaMitzvot on it, so there were a few points that hadn't really. Either hadn't hit me, or I thought are worth re-examining in light of the crazy year that we've been having. So we're not going to do all the Tameh HaMitzvot, but let's make two general points. So one point I want to reiterate because of what we did yesterday. So the Rambam suggests that one of the reasons, right, this is in the Morne Vuchim and Chelek Gimel, in Chelek Gimel and Perek Lametet, suggests that one of the reasons for Shemitah is agricultural, right? That it allows the land to lie fallow. And we know that allowing the land to lie fallow is good for agriculture. But, and this was an angle I really hadn't thought about. Maybe you did, but I didn't. The Abarbanel critiques this. But the Abarbanel critiques this in light of what we said yesterday, which was, if you understand the kliyakar, that the special bracha of the land is the quality, so this is not going to be a kasha. But if you take it kipshuto, that it means there's going to be a lot more, it's not clear that that would actually help. Meaning leaving it fallow is one thing, but if the year before it's like overtaxed because, you know, it produces triple, it's not actually clear. And furthermore, the Abarbanel just says, he says, you know, once we're talking miracles, right, I mean, if you're worried that land is going to weaken, right, like Dafka, it's like the year before Shemitah, that you have 3 years of produce being produced, like you do need to read this in context and figure out, does it make it actually make sense in totality? Now, obviously, there are other reasons to reject the agricultural reason, which is the Pasuk doesn't say that. The Pasuk says it's about Shabbat LaHashem, it's about recognizing the land as God's. It doesn't sound like it's purely pragmatic. It could be that it's secondarily pragmatic. Right, so you can always say that it is that it's secondarily. Another critique of this is the Akedat Yitzchak. The Akedat Yitzchak says, I don't understand. He said, if the Rambam was right that the reason for Shemitah was that it allows the land to lie fallow, so what should the punishment be if you believe in any sort of Midah Keneged Midah here? What should the punishment be of not keeping Shemitah?
Bad harvest.
Right? I mean, you didn't keep the law. The law was motivated. It wouldn't make sense that the Torah actually tells you what it is and what is the punishment for not keeping Shemitah, which we learn also in this, well, not in this, in this week's parsha, but not Bahar, right? Meaning it's a double parsha in Bechukotai, which is, according to the simple pshat, galut. So, matpitam galut. Right? Meaning, if this is fundamentally agricultural, then galut doesn't make sense. Galut makes sense as the punishment when you recognize that the simple pshat is that the point of Shemitah is to recognize the land as God's. If you deny the land as God's, you don't get to live there. That actually has a certain theological coherence that saying, I want you to make sure that your produce is healthy, and if you don't do it, I'll kick you out of the land. Right? There's something there that in the totality doesn't make sense. So that was the first sort of things that I don't know if we really fleshed out last year. The second one is insights into coronavirus and Shemitah, okay? But I did think, as I was looking back over it, that it was worth reiterating these points, which I do think we mentioned last year. But there's a point that comes up in several Mefarshim, that is, at least one of the reasons of Shemitah is that it forces us to put pause on our frenetic lives. It's just, you're always working, you're constantly busy, you can't think about spirituality, about anything, ever. I was listening to a shiur by Rav Asher Weiss, Russia Wise did a Zoom schmooze with the Gush guys last week. Ellie Weber arranged it. It was quite fun to see because like they just put up the whole schmooze. So like he's just like schmoozing, and he's gotten quite good at Zoom. Not, you know. So he said that, you know, he's been thinking a lot about Corona, and he like Myra Bame, is very much opposed to saying things like, this is a punishment for a particular sin, right? We don't know what God wants without nevuah. But, as he said, that doesn't stop us from, as the Rav would have put it, to ask not why did this happen, but what do we learn from this, or what do we do now, right? That's the Rav's argument in several places, actually, right? The proper response to tragedy or suffering is how do we move from here? Or the way Rav Asher puts it is we're allowed to speculate insofar as it helps us do tshuva. Meaning, we're not claiming this is actually the reason. We're claiming, like, maybe this is the reason or what we can learn from it. But similar idea. And he said, if nothing else, one of the things we've learned is that, he said, it's as if, basically, our lives had been paced so fast that we just couldn't hear God anymore. Right? Which, again, if this is the rationale or it's what we're supposed to learn, I think it's definitely one of the things we've learned on this is that, like, you know, we have been forced to take a break. And if you, you know, fill up that time with, you know, watching Netflix all day, you've sort of missed the point. If, you know, when the world shuts down, and you've seen this, right? I'm sure you've seen or you yourself have experienced that it has forced a certain level of introspection. Not always, right? I'm not saying that all day, every day, everyone, the way we respond to coronavirus is tshuva. Maybe the tzaddikim, you know, gdolim v'topim mimeni, that's what they've been doing. But at some level, it does force us to re-examine, like, what are we involved in all the time now that we're not doing that? And there's something really, I think, true about that and powerful about that, that if we walk away from this, you know, I wrote this article in Tradition, in the Tradition blog last week, about Shechayanu. But one of the things I did, which I had added from the original version, which, whatever, I'd written it a few weeks ago, and then I missed when they sent it to me to edit, so it came out only last week, I linked a song by Hanan Ben-Ari, who's an Israeli... Well, the one he wrote for coronavirus, Gaguim of Ne'adam. So I didn't think it was. I actually liked the lyrics, right? But especially his last line was that he hopes that Macharach Acharsha Telchi, right, tomorrow after you leave, Lo Niyeshuv Oto Adavar, right? It shouldn't be, life shouldn't be the exact same. I mean, if at the end of this, life goes back to normal and we have not learned anything, then, again, without getting to what exactly schar va'onesh, if we haven't learned something from an experience that has changed our life this much, then we have missed an opportunity. That, I think, is undeniable theological statement about Judaism, right? Anything that intense, you should learn something. It should change you. And here you see that several of the Mefarshim actually argue that that is essentially what Shemitah is. Right, it's not, you know, a suffering, but it is God just putting pause and forcing you to re-examine values by sort of shaking you out of the normal frenetic pace of life. And this is found in both the Akedah Yitzchak and more detail in Rav Kook in his introduction to Shabbat Aretz. And we definitely looked at this last year, but it's worth looking back at it. I have the English Nechama Leibovitch, so I have a translation, so you don't have to parse the complicated Hebrew of both the Akedah Yitzchak and Rav Kook. So here's the Akedah Yitzchak. He said, the second point, that the 7 years of work and the suspension of work in every seventh year causes us to realize that our mission on earth is not to be slaves to the soil, but a much higher and nobler one. Work should only serve the purpose of providing food and other needs, while our task is to attain the supreme end. The purpose of giving this land to this people was not to be brought into the land in order to be enslaved by it, and addicted to tilling it and gathering in the crops and enrich themselves, as do the other nations in their lands. That is to say, let them dwell on the land and trade in it, for the land, behold, is large enough for them. Their purpose is to accomplish themselves and seek perfection according to the will of their Creator, while satisfying the need of their sustenance. In order to underscore this vital task, they were given this great sign to remind them that they should work the land 6 years and let it rest in the seventh, to make them realize that earthly work and toil were not intended to be the road to man's might, but something from which they should take a rest for the sake of the Lord. And then he continues. Rav Kook is a bit more poetic and lengthier, but I'll read some of it. So this is in his introduction to Shabbat Haaretz. I was pushing, by the way, to learn Shemitah next year, but I think we lost it. Rabbi Ginsburg said maybe in 2 years, like, which is actually Shemitah. Uh-huh. I wanted to do it in anticipation so I'd be prepared, but, you know, whatever. That's me.
You don't need to be prepared. You just need to learn the halachas.
You mean like the Yerushalmi?
Yeah. To learn Yerushalmi. Really? Yeah, learn Yerushalmi, yeah.
Yeah, because there's no
bother. No, to learn the Yerushalmi for a year.
Yeah.
I'm totally, I'm totally.
I think I can see why he said no.
No, he said, well, maybe the after that, maybe. He might just be pushing me off.
Quote from Rabbi Ginsburg, I'm not sure the Yerushalmi works with the Brisker there. So
Shemitah, there's been a lot of good stuff written. Like Blumenzweig from Yerucham wrote a sefer on it. Rav Asher Weiss has a sefer on Shemitah. The good stuff. Anyways, so let me just look at some of Rav Kook, and then we'll call it a day. So he says, the treasure of the nation, the divine blessing that has been implanted in, the order of the world, the righteous and good life, lived in harmony with justice and peace, justice and honesty, peace and tranquility, grace and courage, permeated by the all-embracing contemplation of the divine purpose. Even the translation into English, it's like, okay. Life can only be perfected through the affording of a breathing space from the bustle of everyday life. The individual recovers from the influence of the mundane at frequent intervals, every Shabbat day. What the Shabbat achieves regarding the individual, the Shemitah achieves with regards to the nation as a whole. This nation, in which the Divine Spirit dwells prominent and eternal, has special need of expressing from time to time the revelation of its own divine light at its fullest brightness, not suppressed by the cares and toil of the passions and rivalries of everyday life, so that the totality of the soul's purity may be revealed within it. And if that callousness, which is bound to be present in the life of a community, causes the deterioration of the moral standard of life and the constant conflict between the ideal heeding of the appeal to practice love and kindness and truthfulness, compassion and pity on the one hand, and the raging oppression, coercion, and pressure of the quest for material gain inevitable in daily life on the other, cause the distance of the divine light from the cognitive capacity of the nation, the periodical suspension of the normal social routine raises this nation when morally settled, spiritually and morally, and crowns it with perfection. This is achieved through the divine content that is rooted in the nation, and which stands high above any social system and order, and which raises and perfects the social order. A year of solemn rest is essential for both the nation and the land, a year of peace and quiet without oppressor and tyrant, etc. Now, I'm not claiming that this coronavirus thing has been, you know, some idyllic, peaceful thing that Rav Kook describes Shemitah as, but I do think it's true that it has forced us to take pause on a lot of things that were normal. And like I said, you know, as the Rav said, and Rusher said in a slightly different way, if we don't walk out of this experience having learned something, then we've missed the point. And I think, you know, the model of Shemitah, that sometimes just putting a pause on life teaches us something. This has been, you know, bigger than that, and I think we do need to think of some way that when we leave it, that we walk away and life is not exactly identical, that we've taken the time to realize what's important, what's not, etc. And you know, you really do see how it has put a pause on the world. You know, like, you know, things is, you know, we can talk internally in the Jewish world, but if you look in the non, like in just the general world, this was the first time that people realized that it's actually possible to affect air quality, right? They really got it, because suddenly Wuhan, right? They think it is, at the moment, they think it is possible, just in terms of deaths that normally happen in Wuhan every year, that more people will have been saved from the improvement in air quality than from the loss in coronavirus because of how bad air quality is in Wuhan. Right, like when you realize that, and you start again, I'm not getting into global warming. That's not my point. My point is just that, like, we put a pause in the world, and like we've seen a lot of things, right? You know, whether it be air quality, right, or it be, you know, I've already started seeing people asking Shailas, what if people have for the first time in a long time found davening to be inspirational because now they do Kabbalah Shabbat with their family. Do they have to go back to shul once we're allowed, or can they maintain this? Right? Now, so as I saw one of my rebbeim respond, he said, look, if you make this a weekly thing, it will also become the non-inspirational thing. Right? What makes it inspirational is that you did it in extenuating circumstances, and it was a shake-up from the normal routine. Right?
Way to crash their inspiration down.
No, I mean, it's true. Like, if you do it every week, it's not going to be as inspirational. But, on the other hand, it doesn't negate the point that when you walk out of this, if you, for the first time in a long time, found tefillah meaningful, you should try to maintain that, right? You should try to maintain that. And you know, if we don't use this shake-up as an opportunity to sort of learn something, right, and grow in some way, then we've missed an opportunity. And again, I'm not saying that justifies it. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm just saying our responsibility is whenever we have a shake-up like that, to learn something from it. And I think, you know, some of the ideas that appear in Shemitah point to that idea. This is obviously, again, less idyllic than Shemitah. But if we have to learn something from that, Kavachomer, we should find some way of growing from this. So that's my Musari Shemitah coronavirus thoughts. And then, yeah.